Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Third round, 2021. Quarterfinals, 2022. What happens in 2023, Covey?
Having been the number one seed in tournaments before and kind of feeling the pressure, I think it won't faze him. Roland Garros, he has officially pulled out.
I thought he had actually retired at one point. Will this be the most open Roland Garros in recent years? This is episode 2, and we're going to be going through, as usual, the contenders this week, Alcaraz and Iga, the latest news, tennis shootout, a rankings update, and then finish on the surprise package. Crack open a beer and get ready for the countdown. Hey, welcome back to the countdown here on Game to Love. If you haven't already, make sure hit a like on this video, subscribe to the channel, join us on all audio platforms as well. There's no JG with us this week. He flew off just after his birthday and just after the big press conference of Rafael Nadal, where he didn't announce retirement, but he did announce that he will be out for the foreseeable future. But in his place today, we do have Covey. How are you doing, sir? Are you well?
Doing great. Absolutely great. Thank you for having me. Very, very happy. Even though it's JG's birthday, I get the gift of being able to be on the pod today. And also happy that his favorite player did not retire on his birthday weekend.
Yeah, well, maybe in this episode, we're not going to make it too Rafael Nadal heavy. No, JG. So we are going to focus on the two young world number ones, and they are the favorites to win Roland Garros. And they both will be the number one seeds as well, going into the tournament once Rome is complete. So we're going to start off by looking at their current form, because there's obviously a tournament going on right now, and Carlos Alcaraz, we're going to start with, he went out. He went out after his second match in Rome, and it was a pretty hefty defeat to world number 135, the qualifier from Hungary, Fabian Marajan. And was this just a tired Alcaraz, or was this just a sign that maybe there are a few chinks in the armor and he's not as, like, unbelievably unbeatable as what we thought he was coming into Rome? What do you think?
I mean, you know, he's had, so far in the year, Alcaraz is 30 wins and 3 losses. He's 10-1 on hard courts, 20-2 on clay courts. So I'm not too worried about that one loss. I was surprised at how he did get beaten in straight sets, and he just never really found his footing in that match. But I feel like getting 2 matches in Rome after 2 lengthy runs, wins in Barcelona and Madrid, I think that he got enough practice in there. So I'm not too worried about that loss. But yeah, definitely something that was out in the ether after that loss.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that it won't affect his performance at Roland Garros. That's my personal opinion. I feel he's played a lot of tennis, obviously winning the Madrid Masters. That was a fantastic thing that he's been able to achieve twice now. But it does leave you susceptible when you play so much tennis to be a little bit maybe off your game. I thought he looked good against Ramos, but up against Marajan, who was just hitting winner after winner after winner. Sometimes you come up against those type of players, and Djokovic experiences it. seen Rafa experience it, Federer's experienced it. All of the great players experience when you come up against a player who is just playing lights out tennis and you get wiped off the court. And if you're not on your best game that day, you will lose. And he nearly won the second set, but unfortunately, it just wasn't enough. I don't know if he'd have won the match if he'd won the second set still anyway. It was one of those matches he could have still maybe pushed it over the line on another day, but it wasn't his day. It was definitely one just for Malazan. I'm glad it was, because it put a new player on the map as well. Mm-hmm. Not many people knew who he was. Probably most people didn't know who he was. Myself and JG, we saw him in Zagreb last year in a challenger. Oh. Big fans of him on the Challenger Tour. I tried to speak to him. He actually retired with like heat stroke or something during that match, I think, that we watched him play, which was really unfortunate. But since then, it seems like he's really improved his game. Looks like he doesn't take any prisoners, just wants to go out there, enjoy himself. And he's taken a lot more risks on court, and it paid off in this tournament.
Yeah, and, you know, Alcaraz is a very aggressive type of player, and it's not often that he faces other aggressive players. And that's one thing I did appreciate about the game of Marajan, is that he has no fear in coming to the net. He has a great hands. He doesn't even have a big serve for a tall guy. That's something that he can develop and improve. But, I was just really impressed. He's very steady. He was just ripping ground strokes. I'm talking... Alcaraz was not expecting to get, you know, pulverized on certain second serves, and he kept on hitting very deep. I also feel like, I haven't seen him play too many times, Marjan, but it definitely felt like he was redlining. He hit I think 18 drop shots, and I think he won maybe 16 or something of those. And his drop shots were perfection. I'm not kidding you. I think that day he was better than I've ever seen Carlos, and Carlos has had some exceptional days.
Yeah, I feel that the one thing that he has, like a silver lining maybe in that performance against Malazan, was the desire was still there. I mean, it wasn't that he wasn't ever trying in the match. He was trying constantly. He was being given the runaround, and he didn't give up on any ball. He was hitting balls that were literally behind him at some points. Yeah, he was running backwards and flicking the ball. I don't even know how he got to half of the shots that Malazan was hitting, because normally they're just clean winners, but he was getting them, making him play other shots, but he was still losing the final rally. But that for me is massive. If you're an Alcaraz fan and think, was he just really having an off day? I don't think he was having that much of an off day. I think those things happen in tennis, and we've seen it. We saw Nadal Rosal at Wimbledon. That's another example of someone when they redline, like you were saying, and everything they hit's a winner. What are you supposed to do? Dustin Brown, another person who did it as well.
Yep. I mean, even on the women's side, Ostapenko, she's one of those who can kind of just out of nowhere, if everything's going in, she can literally hit any player in the world off the court. It was definitely a very impressive performance by Marajan. And then I believe he took out Yuri Lehechka in the round before. I mean, I had Lehechka and Alcaraz playing each other, and I was really excited for that match because I think they're both very good, young, aggressive players. Lehechka's in that mold where he's young, but he doesn't have the fear of coming to the net. I think it showed a little bit more oomph, and kind of gave me a little bit more belief that potentially he could turn this into some momentum moving forward.
Well, hopefully. I mean, Malazan, hopefully that's not the last we hear of him. And we're sort of here to cover Alcaraz. We've given Malazan his 15 minutes of fame. Hopefully he can keep on getting himself in the headlines. For Alcaraz, though, we look back through his form, because that's what we're here to have a little look at. And we just go down. Obviously, he won Barcelona. Then he won in Madrid as well. So back-to-back clay court tournament wins. And if we compare that to last year when he was coming into Roland Garros, he also obviously won the Madrid Masters. But let's go down just to have a look at what happened last year.
Yep.
He won Rio at the start of the year in February. Then he won in Barcelona. Then he won in Madrid. And that was how he entered. That was, he didn't play Rome last year, did he? He missed Rome and then was ready for Roland Garros just as a precaution, I guess. Probably just thought maybe I'll play too much tennis.
Yeah, after Barcelona and Madrid, he was just spent. I think that's the total of 11 matches that he played. And so he opted to take off of Rome. Now, a lot of people were wondering if that was a good idea. I personally thought it was a good idea because I think you do need a little bit of rest. However, Rome is the closest conditions to Roland Garros. So it could have actually in the end maybe not been the best decision. But in the end, I think the body can tell you what's going on. And I think he's just listening there.
Yeah, for sure. And if we go to, let's go back to just have a look to see how he's got on. Obviously, after those tournaments, he'd won last year. He came in on a winning run. He got to the quarterfinals where he faced the person that he'd last played in a final, which was Sasha Zverev.
In the final.
Exactly. Yep. And he absolutely obliterated him in what is Zverev's type of, like, clay, the hard hitting, the big serving, the faster clay.
High altitude.
But Zverev was just playing out of his skin at the French Open last year. Yeah. I've never seen him play that well. I've said it before. I thought he probably would have beaten Nadal had he not got injured. But we'll never know, will we? That's the problem. So it was just one of those. It was just so competitive that it was compelling how well Zverev was playing. It was really made me warm to him as a tennis player. I thought he won a lot of fans in that match, which was, and the fact that he was able to beat Carlos Alcaraz beforehand, even more impressive, because people were touting him even last year to maybe win Roland Garros, Carlos, after coming off those two tournament wins. But you see, he's getting gradually better, isn't he? Third round, 2021. Quarterfinals, 2022. What happens in 2023, Covey?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like as the number one seed, so it's the first time he's coming in as the number one seed in a major. Now, the good thing about that is he's obviously not going to have to face Djokovic until a final. But the other thing is, he actually had become world number one last year. And then after he won the US Open, became world number one, he actually had a pretty tough little run on the indoor hard court kind of circuit. And some losses, some injuries. He tore his abdomen. I wasn't able to play at the ATP Tour Finals. But I think he learned that when you become number one, there's a type of pressure, and he's gone through the pressure of being number one. He didn't deal with it that well. That's even his words. But I think now that he's a number one going into a Grand Slam for the first time, having been the number one seed in tournaments before and kind of feeling the pressure, I think it won't faze him. I feel like if he hadn't been number one before and came into here for the first time as a world number one seed, it would have kind of been like, oh, the extra pressure. But the fact that he's gone through it. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's semifinal or maybe not. Maybe it won't be considered a great tournament. So that's how high his standards are. So I'm expecting semis or better for Carlitos.
Yeah, I mean, you can see through all of his Grand Slams, they only get better. Australian second round, then third round. French third round quarterfinal, Wimbledon second round, then fourth round, US Open quarterfinal, then won it. So you'd think the sky's the limit, really. Surely Wimbledon, he's going to go further again, but we'll wait and see. We'll get to Wimbledon once French Open's done, and we'll talk about that. But let's just have a look just quickly who he played at last year's Roland Garros and how he got to that quarterfinal, where he did get defeated by Alex Zverev, and it was a easy win against Londero in the first round. Then the epic one against Ramos. Like, no one wants to play him. He's just a bogey player for anyone on clay. And I remember that it was about nearly 5 hours long, that match.
Yeah, and he's even saved match points in this one.
Yeah,
did Carlos Alcaraz. So I don't know if it was two, one or two, 100% at least one, but I think it might have been two. But yeah, I mean, crazy gutsy performance. At the time, he had just turned 19. So he was just 18 for about a month before this. So, I mean, I'm always impressed with any youngster that can handle the pressure. But to face match points in a major and come through, that's very, very impressive. And then I think he kind of got on a tiny bit of a roll before he ran into Zverev after that.
Yeah, I mean, the next two seem even more impressive. Straight sets against Korda, straight sets against Khachanov, who now since then went on to become a bit of a Grand Slam master, really. I mean, he only turns up in slams after this one. I mean, even then, he was there in the fourth round, so he wasn't doing too badly. But he came up against Zverev, and unfortunately, he came up against that was a star grade Sasha Zverev playing at Roland Garros. So that's the type of person that you may have to play in a quarterfinal. Like, I don't think he'd be as worried playing him now, though. I feel that Alcaraz would probably beat him.
I mean, he handily beat him once again in Madrid. So last year he beat him in the final. It was 6-3, 6-1 or something. It was crazy. And I think he even did better this time, didn't he? Was there a bagel in there?
I think it was 6-2, 6-1.
Oh, sorry.
Was it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it might have been. I think it was slightly better either way. But anyways, you know, I think Zverev, he was playing. I've never, ever, ever seen him play better than he had played in Roland Garros last year. Pretty much the whole tournament. I didn't watch every single match, but I did watch, of course, his match against Carlos. And then I also watched that epic 3-hour two-setter. That's how far they got against Rafa before that horrific injury.
What a match was, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I just don't see it this year from Zverev, but he does have the pedigree to come surprise someone. So you never know.
Yeah. Who knows on that one? But that is Carlos Alcaraz's route to how far he got at the quarterfinals last year. Maybe he could have done better had he not played this 5-set match in the second round, but we'll never know, really. But I'm sort of glad that he did, because it sort of gave him the strength of character to come through a 5-set match at a slam, which is also always like character building. And then we wouldn't have got to see that Zverev Nadal performance had Zverev not won. So I was pretty impressed by that one as well. So let's move on from that and just see. These are the odds. I know we went through them on the last episode, but you can see Carlos Alcaraz still the favorite for Roland Garros. Novak Djokovic still the second favorite, and somebody has disappeared from the odds. That Mr. Nadal, no longer the third favorite. He is no longer in the tournament. And Holger Luna, now the third favorite for Roland Garros, above Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yeah, and I mean, he took out Tsitsipas in the finals of Stockholm last year. He's beaten him again this year, I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, Runa has been on just the trajectory. He's just been straight upwards since pretty much the end of the French Open last year.
What do you make of the fact that I saw an interesting statistic that Holger Luna has a winning or equal head-to-head against all of the top five, apart from Casper Ruud, who he has a 0-4, and he's playing him obviously in the semi-finals in Rome. So, what do you make of that? Yeah. I mean, Casper Ruud on the clay courts as well—that's his home.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that has to do that head-to-head specifically with Runa and Ruud has more to do kind of with age. You know, Ruud has been established for a little bit longer. Runa just turned 20 last month, or April 30th, so not even a month ago. So I feel like now Runa is definitely a different player, so I can see why he is ahead of Casper Ruud. Another thing about Casper Ruud, he is defending tons and tons of points, so he's going to need to make he's got to go at least to the quarterfinals to salvage a decent amount of points. But I mean, is it 1200 points for losing?
He's a good draw. That essentially just needs a good draw. For me,
which he had last year.
How interesting is it that just a week ago, the bookies had him at 34-1. He's halved his odds in a week just playing, getting to the semi-finals in Rome. Like, how crazy is it? Just because he did well in one tournament, now they suddenly, he was last year's finalist. I thought he'd definitely be surely up there with better odds than 33-1. Now he's suddenly gone down to 17s.
Well, you know, continue. My bad.
That's all right. No, go for it.
I was just going to say that he had a very rough start to the year. A lot of people were mentioning that he had gone on in the off season, where most people kind of take their break or get in the gym to get physically, say, buffed up or whatever. He was on a South American tour with Rafael Nadal, and a lot of people kind of mentioned that perhaps that wasn't the best idea. He's even acknowledged that. So he had a very rough start to the year. But in just the last couple of weeks, he's starting to show some results. So I think the reason he was 34 before was because he had such a rough start to the year. And now that he has kind of, you know, sharpened up and rounded into form a little bit more so, I think I can see why he's at 17 now. 17 is definitely closer to where he should be than 34 for sure. Would have been a good time to put some money on him, maybe just for the heck of it at that point.
A little bit surprised me that Jannik Sinner's above him, to be honest. I don't know why, but there's part of me that feels that Jannik Sinner's never been to the final of the French Open. But people are going to start thinking I'm getting on Sinner's back, I think, because I say some harsh things about Jannik Sinner because I think he's got so much potential, but he just doesn't live up to the hype. And I feel that his ceiling is so much higher than he probably, if he just dug in a little bit more and showed that little bit more grit, I feel that he would win Masters. He would get to the finals of Slams. I feel like he might even win a Slam, but I need to see a bit more. Like, I need to see that you're not going to, like, I don't know, pull out with an injury, or you're not going to just, there just seems there's a little element of giving up in him that I don't like, and I can see it, which I don't see from the likes of Carlos Alcaraz or Holger Rune.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there, definitely, in a sense. I'm not going to say that he's one of those people. This is a good way to put it, I think. Sinner is one of those players that I feel like as soon as he does get that one first big title, the dominoes are going to fall. He's going to get the confidence. Oh, I can do this. When it gets very physical, when a player makes it physical and long, and you know, that's when I find that he has issues. You know, sometimes he'll be keeled over. I remember Medvedev in the, was it the Miami final? There was a point, there was literally one specific point in the second set. It was a really long, like 29 shot rally, but right after, the way he was sucking in the air, and Medvedev's looking at him from across the court, and you know, Medvedev's pretty much a robot. The guy can go until his oil runs out of his body or gas or whatever. It was a very good representation of what can happen to Jannik Sinner when the physicality goes upward. So also think that he still hasn't filled out. He happens to have a longer body. So a player like him, like Alcaraz, has filled out. He's in his man body, as they say. Sinner still is, you know, being so lanky and tall, he still hasn't filled out. So when I think when he fills out, he's going to be maybe kind of like a Burdich body type, and he'll be hopefully more durable. So that's how I see. Crossed. Yeah, fingers. Exactly. Because I think he has a very high potential, and I do also have him pegged to win majors.
Cool. Right. Let's move on from from Carlos Alcaraz and the men. Let's move on to the number one seed on the women's side and the reigning defending champion, which is Iga Świątek. And unfortunately, I know that you were covering the match. Was it yesterday? And it was, it'd probably be 2 days ago as you're watching this now. Yelena Rybakina, her nemesis, it seems, on the tour, we thought it was only on the hard courts. But now she has a win over her on the clay in Rome, where Iga's at home normally. She's back-to-back champion in Rome, normally with ease as well. She doesn't really even drop sets. She just plows her way through and wins the title pretty easily. This one, she was tested, but then ended with a retirement, which the knee being the problem. Is that correct?
It looked like the quadricep, so just above the knee.
Just above the knee.
Yeah, she kind of pushed off to the right to return a ball, and you could see that her kind of just above her knee, like her leg kind of clicked, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like it had this abrupt kind of stop, start, stop motion, and then for a quick second, you're like, oh, you kind of notice like, okay, something kind of happened, but then you're like, oh, that was so fast, maybe it's nothing. And then that actually happened on the second last point of the set. So I believe Rybakina was up 6-3 in the tiebreak to tie it up in the second set. And when it was, I think it was, yeah, so 6-3. And then I think Iga won a point 6-4. And then that was the point, I think, where she got hurt on. And then Rybakina ended up closing it out, taking it, I think it was 7-4. And then pretty much
7-3, but yeah,
7-3, close enough. Yeah, and then doing so many matches, they're all bleeding into each other.
Yeah,
but
I know,
but yeah, it was honestly crazy because Rybakina had worked her way back into the match before the actual injury. So you know, a lot of people, especially in the chats, there was a lot of chat where people were like, "Oh, Rybakina has no chance against Iga," and the conditions were in every way favorable to Iga. She had the slow, heavy court. They were playing at night, slows it down even more. And it was raining, slows it down even more. And then, of course, Rybakina, one of her biggest weapons is her serve. Well, that gets neutralized with a slower court as well. So, make no mistake, Rybakina made her way back into that. So, you know, I just want to make people to know that it wasn't like, oh, Iga got hurt and then Rybakina. No, she actually fought her way back. She's completely dominated in the first set. She lost 6-2. I think she was down 4-love at one point. It almost looked like a bagel was on its way. And she was also down 4-2 in the second set before she turned it around. And that's where the moniker, the Ice Queen, comes in. And that's a very well-deserved. So anyways, that's maybe a little bit longer of a recap of that match. But it was, I just wanted to share that it was a very good match. It was turning into one. And it was a real bummer that that it had to be a retirement. But hoping for the very best for Iga.
Yeah. You're the best man to give us the lowdown on it. You were the one covering it. Unfortunately, I could not be there. I was out celebrating JG's birthday. It was just unfortunate it had to be on the night of Świątek Rybakina. But yeah, what a devastating way to finish that match. And Iga leading up to that match, she was looking invincible, it had to be said. It looked like the same old Iga, same old Rome, double bagel for Pavlyuchenkova, a single bagel. Well, it's pretty much a double bagel against Serenko. She lost the first two games, then won 12 games in a row against Serenko. And then Vekic. Vekic was actually, I'd say, competitive, but that you always sort of knew Iga was going to win. It was competitive to a point, but then not really, because Vekic didn't ever get the feeling she was going to win the match. She just felt like Iga wasn't playing that great, but she was going to win. And it was one of those type of matches where she got more games than everybody else normally gets. And she hit deep. And that tends to be the way that you do get a few games from Iga. As long as you keep the ball near the baseline, she can't step in. She can't play her tennis the way she just can't get off as often as she wants. But the Rybakina one, like you said, the Ice Queen. I feel like she's the Medvedev of the women's tour at the moment. I feel like she's got a Grand Slam under her belt, same as Daniil. And she doesn't like she doesn't like the clay. She's just not familiar with it. I feel Daniil hates the clay. Or claims to. Seems to be all right on it these days.
But, yeah, right.
But I feel like she's the same. She feels like these are sort of free matches where she can just go on, have some fun. If she does well, great. If she doesn't, still learning. And I feel that's the best way to look at it. And she's learning fast, I feel, because she had a fantastic tournament in this tournament. She's still going, obviously. I'm not talking about in the past tense. But the fact she knocked out Vondrousova as well in the last round, she could be a contender for Roland Garros. She beat her in straight sets. And she got a revenge on Kalinskaya, even though it was a retirement from Kalinskaya. She had two retirements, in fact, in this tournament. But I feel like she was still playing good tennis, and I think that's the main thing to take away from Rybakina. She's finding her feet on the clay now. But we're here to talk about Iga and talk about how she's performed on the clay leading up to Roland Garros. And we'll have a look here at the tournament before she got to the final. She lost to Sabalenka. I mean, up until then, was only troubled by Alexandrova. And the tournament before that, she won in Stuttgart, where she beat Sabalenka.
Second course in a row.
Exactly. So her clay court form, pretty good as always. And the only thing we've got to really worry about is this potential injury, really, on Iga's side. And if we look back at, obviously, last year. Right, let me just go 1 second. Just go to the top. Right. If we go back to last year, obviously, she was the winner there. Year before, quarterfinal. Year before that, the winner. Year before, fourth round. So she's never been any less than the fourth round at Roland Garros, which that's impressive to have never
impressive.
From your first ever one. That
it's crazy. And then not only that, she you know, she goes fourth round in her first ever tournament, and then the second one, she wins it without dropping a single set. So yeah, incredible. Roland Garros. Yeah, it's I mean, I'm not gonna say it's like how it feels for Rafa when he's there, but she's kind of getting close.
I mean, it is a little bit more like that. I feel like it's getting to, it could be a similar story if she continues with the dominance that she has on clay.
Yeah.
Last year, she came into Roland Garros. She played in, let's just have a look. Was it just in Rome? She won. Oh, sorry. I'm just going in the wrong year now. Apologies. Go down a little bit further. She played in Stuttgart. She played in Rome. And then she won both of them. And then she won, obviously, the French Open. So that was last year's results. And this year, she's just won Stuttgart, got to the final in Madrid. So slightly different. And then in Rome, she's gone out slightly injured. So, and then coming now into Roland Garros, in there's more of a question mark over, is she going to be fit, that type of thing. So
and we
know what happened last year's Roland Garros.
She took it all the way. And you know, one other thing about this match with Rybakina, oh gosh, I actually just forgot what I was about to say, so if it comes back, I'll let you know.
All right, no worries. We'll come back to that. You should have a little pen and paper. Just jot it down.
You actually.
That's all right. Or a computer. Phone. No one uses pen and paper anymore. Right.
Yeah, right.
But if we look down last year's, you see the level of dominance. So she had two clay court tournaments before Roland Garros. She dropped one set in the whole of that clay court, those three tournaments, and two sets, including Roland Garros. Yeah, so she dropped one against Samsonova, none in Rome, where she won it all in straight sets, and then only one to Qinwen Zheng. And then she obviously bageled her in that match anyway.
Yeah, I remember I watched that match. I remember being surprised that she lost in a tiebreak, because I remember thinking, like, she doesn't even go to tiebreaks, you know? Like, it's so rare that she actually even gets pushed to a tiebreak.
Yeah, she was obviously annoyed, though, that she went there, and then she made sure it was quick work. I mean, the first set was an hour and 24 minutes, and the second set, 31 minutes, third set, 45 minutes. So probably quicker than the first set put together, those last two sets. So that's what she can do. And then obviously the dominance that she showed in the final and the semi-final and even the quarter-final last year, to be in the slam and to have those type of results against top quality opposition.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's not just against some random, you know, 87th ranked player who ended up making it to the semis. It was, you know, world number three Pegula. You got top 10 player Kasatkina. You got number six in the world, or whatever she was last year, Coco Gauff. By the way, I remember what I was going to say about that match. I think the big regret potentially that Iga could have, she actually had six, she was 1-for-6 in breakpoint opportunities in the second set. And I did mention she was up 4-2 in that second set. So very possibly if she had gotten just one of those six break points that she made, or I think one, she was 1-4-6. So if she'd gotten one more of the five chances, very likely she wouldn't have even had to push to go to a tiebreaker and, you know, end up, you know, getting hurt or whatever. So something I just remembered in the middle, in the moment there.
No problem. Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. It's a game of fine margins. We always say it. And it could potentially have gone the other way. This could happen in many tennis matches, but that's what makes it such an enthralling sport.
Yep.
Well, if we look at the favourites for Roland Garros on the women's side, you can see it's quite interesting. Well, when you look below Iga.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
That's the thing, because Iga, the clear favourite. I mean, you can't deny it. She's the favorite for a reason. She's the reigning champion, and she's normally so dominant. I mean, I'm surprised it's still that they're not reading too much into any injury. I mean, it could just be a precautionary thing, like rather just drop out of Rome and not have any worries of Roland Garros than keep playing and then maybe make something worse. So
yeah,
I get where they're coming from completely with it, but. How I'm just having a look. Rybakina, she's shortened her odds from last week. She was at 19s. She's now down to 10s. Oh. So she's now the third favorite. She's gone above Barbora Krejcikova now, who obviously is a Roland Garros champion from the past anyway herself. And anybody else shortened their odds a bit? Ostapenko, I was saying last week, and she was one of my outsiders to watch. I think she's moved up from about 30. I think she was like, let me just have a quick check to see what she was last week. So I think she was quite big odds as well. She was, I think she was about 20, maybe she was like 26 or 30s to 30s. She's moved up to about 21s now, Ostapenko. So might maybe worth a punt. Kudermetova as well in there, 29s. Mm.
Interesting. I mean, Ostapenko, that could be a decent for anyone betting. I mean, that's not a bad one.
Definitely.
When she has for the last couple months, she has been on. She's been kind of on an upward trajectory. She is, you know, she relies on being able to play red line tennis, and that's her game plan. Whether it works or not, she just goes for it. And when it works, she can hit anyone off the court. So. Someone I've been wondering about potentially, and of course she is a former champion there as well.
Exactly. When it all clicks for her, she definitely is a threat to any Grand Slam, I think, not just Roland Garros.
In one of my streams, it was an Ostapenko match, and someone was mentioning that her ball speed is faster than Sabalenka.
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's so quick. It's
yeah.
Literally, it's just like a bullet half the time when she's hitting the ball.
Mm.
Right. That is the end of the contenders for episode 2. Ooh. Let's move on to the latest news. Right. Here we are with the latest news section. We're going to be going through all of the news on Twitter. But we've handpicked some stories today because we thought they're all going to be about one guy. So we can't go all in on Rafa today. We're going to go through some Rafa, which is where we're going to start with, obviously. This one coming from Roland Garros themselves saying, Rafa, we can't imagine how hard this decision was. We'll definitely miss you at this year's Roland Garros. Take care of yourself and come back stronger on the courts, I think it's supposed to say. Hoping to see you next year in Paris. And then a nice picture there of Rafa himself holding the trophy. Well, I mean, we sort of spoke about it for over an hour earlier on. Let's give us a quick summary of your thoughts on no Rafa this year at Roland Garros.
Yeah, I mean, not super surprising, but the news, so basically he mentioned about 24 hours before the press conference that he's holding a press conference to let us know what's going on. Basically, he said, my body is not, is telling me that it's not ready. So he says he's going to be, he's going to try and get back on the practice court. He doesn't know if it'll be within 2 months or 4 months, but Roland Garros, he has officially pulled out. Wimbledon as well, he's pulled out, and it's very likely that he probably will not play at the U.S. Open. My feelings towards it, glad that he hasn't officially retired, because there was a little bit of chatter on social media that kind of freaked me out. You know, got to listen to his body. He's got a little kid at home, little baby Rafa. So, you know what? I hope that he can recover as best as possible, and I do hope that he makes his way back on the courts. And you know, I will say that I do think it might be the Grand Slam chances, I think, are pretty much over for him, but let's hope we can see him one more time, maybe next year, either at Roland Garros at the actual tournament or maybe at the Olympics, or hopefully both.
I echo that as well. If you want to see our live reaction to his press conference, go check out the video. We did one earlier on, just reacting live to it. So I thought he had actually retired at one point. So go check that out. It was all in Spanish. I was trying my best to work it out. But yeah, it's easy to misconstrue what someone's saying when you can only, it only tells you part of the conversation on your translator.
The second half of the sentence was missing, and our hearts just kind of dropped for a second.
Yeah, he said he wanted to put a full stop on the career. I was like, what? But yeah, he definitely will be missed. It will make maybe the tournament slightly more competitive, maybe. That's one thing. It maybe opens the door for a few other people coming through. But yeah, Rafa will be very, very much missed. And JG, if he was here, I'm sure he would echo the same. Be much more devastated even still than both of us are probably conveying right now, but we will hear from him when he gets back, and I'm sure we'll hear about it throughout the whole of Roland Garros as well. He will not be forgotten. I'm sure JG will be playing his button or doing bits and pieces just to keep Rafa in the headlines. At least it's just one person you can't not speak about when you're at Roland Garros anyway, and that, so.
And speaking of the countdown, one of my goals is to watch Rafa play in a competitive match, because I want to see him hit a forehand in real time. And just feel the force of like what it sounds like, and what you know, when a professional tennis player, golfer, you know, baseball player, when they swing, you know, the bat, the club, the racket, it's different than when you go to the public tennis court and see people playing, right? So there's a viciousness to it. So the countdown has begun for me. I need to find my way to some city where Rafael is playing in the next year. So too bad he's not going to come to the Laver Cup this year. That would have been easier for me, but here in Vancouver. Yeah.
Sorry to hear that. I've heard that he may be aiming for his comeback tournament to be the Davis Cup. So I think that's late in the year. Like, is it November around that time? Yeah, so that's the aim, apparently. So I think he's planned on missing everything before that. So if he manages to make it for then, great. If not, it may just be a countdown until next year's Roland Garros. So stay tuned with the countdown. We'll keep you updated with Rafa news on when he'll be coming back for any Grand Slam or tournament anyway. So let's move on from Rafa, because I feel like we've done it to death anyway.
Yeah.
And this one was Daniil Medvedev, who was talking about Rafa Nadal missing Roland Garros. And he said, even if he wouldn't be 100% physically and decided to play, it'd be a favorite. Hopefully he can come back as fast as possible, because he's an amazing player, amazing athlete, one of the best in history. I paused him on a really bad face. Foreign apologies to Daniil. I don't think we need to dwell on that one too much. Just nice words from another professional tennis player, another Grand Slam champion in Daniil Medvedev there, who maybe is relishing the chance now to do well at Roland Garros. Maybe he's one of the people who could make the final this year.
I mean, he might be making his way into a final here in Rome. So it's not out of the question. It's, you know, we're kind of joking a bit. But anyways, moving on.
Yeah, this one. Journalist asked after the Novak Luna match, will this be the most open Roland Garros in recent years? To Novak Djokovic, and he replied, it depends if Rafael Nadal plays. And, well, we know that he's not going to be playing now. So maybe it will be the most open Roland Garros in many, many years, because Rafa giving everyone a chance, maybe, just to have a little bit of a run around on the courts and see how they get on. Is everybody who's a Rafa fan going to say this is an asterisk slam, or is that what it's going to be for the rest of time? If you win Roland Garros, you didn't really win it because Rafa's retired from tennis. I don't know, but you can only beat who's in front of you, and you still got to win 2 weeks of tennis to win a Grand Slam. So I feel that no matter who's in the tournament, you still earn it no matter who's there.
Yeah, that's definitely got to have some sort of criteria. You can't just continually say, oh, this person, you know, there's always going to be one person missing. So, well, hopefully not, but
right, on to the next one. Iga giving a quick update. Obviously we were talking about her injury, saying a couple of days off for sure. I'm booking my flight to Paris, so fingers crossed, please, hopefully see you soon. Hopefully.
Yeah. There's no way she books her own flights. She's got someone who doesn't.
Hopefully. Do you like this word, hopefully?
I don't like that word, hopefully. I think she is being slightly precautionary. I think she purposely didn't really mention the injury at all. I don't think maybe she doesn't fully know, or she just kind of wants to keep it low-key as long as possible. But yeah, definitely that word is a little bit unnerving for sure. Loving the new kits, though.
Yeah, really good new outfits, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like that's a bit of a hoodie there that she's got going on there. I like that. Really good.
That's something I would buy something like that.
Definitely improved from the last outfits, haven't they? I mean, do you think this is... She's done this on purpose, make sure she gets out some news on the same day as Rafa gets his news out. Like, she's trying to be the queen of clay, maybe.
I don't know. I think she... I'm going to say no on that specifically, but I don't know. Maybe to get a little bit of attention, you know?
Or maybe if you release it today, it just goes under the radar, so she doesn't even have to get any attention.
There you go. Yeah.
So two ways to look at everything. And this one, you can take us through this one, because you were telling me about it. So go for it.
Really crazy stuff. So I think it was like a week or two ago, Nick Kyrgios. So it says Nick Kyrgios has withdrawn from the French Open due to a foot injury, it should say. Due to a foot he injured at his Canberra home after a man allegedly threatened his mother with a gun and stole his car, according to Australian media. So basically what happened was, I believe they live in the same place, him and his mom and family. So he has a green Tesla. His mother took it to get some groceries. She got robbed at gunpoint. The guy took the car. So apparently she calls Nick Kyrgios and says, you know, this is what happened. So he frantically grabs his phone, and his phone, it's a Tesla, so you can track it with the app.
Yeah.
He helps the cops track down the car. They apprehend the suspect. But what happened, apparently, during the old hullabaloo or whatever they call it, of him finding out that his mother had been, you know, attacked or, you know, whatever the situation, he ran through his house, apparently, to run to her. And he doesn't know when or where, but he apparently lacerated, I think it was the side of his left foot by the pinky. So that's actually the official reason. Everything other than it's actually quite a shame, because they were saying his knee is absolutely perfect. Everything is going better than expected. And the reason that he had to pull out was this laceration on his foot. So crazy, crazy story, crazy scenes from the Canberra household of of Nick Kyrgios. And yeah, unfortunate. I mean, you know, Nick had a phenomenal run at Wimbledon. He kind of made everyone, you know, kind of believe that he's ready to take this seriously. And it's just really been a bummer that he just hasn't really been able to kind of parlay that run into something more. He's just been in injury trouble ever since.
Yeah, I mean, this one, I mean, I take back anything that negative that I said about his withdrawing from Roland Garros now, because I wasn't aware of this. I thought it was just he'd got everyone's hopes up when he said, oh, I'm so into tennis now, I'm going to play Roland Garros this year.
Yeah.
And then he withdrew, and I thought, oh, it's the same old Nick. But it's not same old Nick. It's Nick being courageous and trying to help his mum out, by the sounds of it. So fair play to you, Nick Kyrgios. Injuring yourself, helping your family. You can't really, like, complain to anybody for that. So I just hope that your mum's okay, and I hope your family are all well, and I hope that you recover and in time for Wimbledon, so that we can see you back there playing your best tennis.
And he also had some other, believe it or not, bad news in his life. His just on Instagram yesterday, I think he posted that his grandmother had passed away.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Condolences for that as well. That's absolutely. Everything comes at once, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, comes in, hopefully. They say, in threes sometimes.
Well, don't say that. I was thinking it. I didn't want to say it. Like, oh, yeah, hopefully nothing. So we've got Wimbledon around the corner. don't wish him a third one.
Yeah.
Come on. We'll see you at Wimbledon, Nick.
My apologies. I'm trying not to jinx you here, Nick. My bad.
I know. Come on. We don't want anything else to happen. Like, not threes. No threes.
Yeah.
Anything. Right. Anyway, we'll move away from the news. That's the end of the news. The latest news for Roland Garros. And now we'll move on to the tennis shootout. Right, time for the tennis shootout. If you're new to the countdown, this is where we both get to ask each other a bit of Roland Garros trivia and see if we get it right. I get 30 seconds to answer the question. Do you want to go first or do you want to go second, Covey?
I'll go first.
Okay, nice. That's what I did last week. It didn't really benefit me in any way, okay. But that's fine. Right, 30-second timer on. Okay, and the timer will start when I finish asking the question. And we're going to do it slightly differently this week just to give us a bit of a better chance. I think we're going to continue this. I'm going to give you a question. I'm going to give you four potential answers this time. And then you just pick one of the potential four that I give you.
Okay.
Sounds simple, doesn't it? Right. Okay. So, as it's been a big day for Rafael Nadal and his big press conference, my question is going to be Nadal related. So, Rafael Nadal has won Roland Garros without dropping a set. But how many times has he won Roland Garros without dropping a set? The choices you're going to get are 2, 3, 4, or 5. Go.
Ooh, okay. 2, 3, 4, 5. So the first thing that comes to mind is that he's only been pushed to 5 sets a couple of times. But how many times has he dropped a set? 2, 3.
How many times has he won the whole tournament without dropping a set?
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say 4 times.
Okay, you got 8, 7 seconds. Final answer?
Yeah, final answer. That was the gut. I'm going with the gut.
Right, okay. Stop it. And I can confirm that Rafa Nadal has won Roland Garros without dropping a set. 4 times is correct.
Nice.
Well done. Look at that. He's straight off the bat and he's got it. He's there. The first correct question on the countdown, or correct answered question, is from Covey.
Nice. Well done, I mean, mate. That I'm not going to lie. That was definitely a pure guess, but But it felt good. Felt good. So it had a 25% chance, and I took it.
Well, this is what I mean. I said it's not going to be. It's going to be one of those ones where it's like it's not going to be between 1 and 100. It's just going to be. It's going to be on. You can count them on one hand. So
gotcha.
It's going to be tough. But yeah, you picked right. 4. And if anybody's wondering which years they were, it was 2008, 2010, 2017, and obviously the latest one, 2020.
Unbelievable. All right. Well,
my go.
Yeah. All right.
What have you got for me?
So, okay. And I also have a timer set up here, so you don't have to worry about the clock here. But all right. So my question is, you went with the king. I'm going with the queen. Iga Swiatek has played in Roland Garros 4 times, winning it twice. Now I'm going to give you a list of 4 players. And I need you to tell me which 2 of these 4 players have defeated her at Roland Garros. And your clock starts right after I give you the options, which are Maria Sakkari, Simona Halep, Yelena Ostapenko, Annette Kontaveit. Timer starts now.
Right. Well, I'm going to go straight off the bat and I'm going to go Simona Halep with my first answer. I'm pretty self-assured on Simona Halep. I think that she came and she battered her the next year in the same exact score she lost to her. The other one, it's going to be tough. Do you say Ostapenko? I feel like she's the only other. I feel Ostapenko is the only one who could have done it. I can't think off the top of my head, but I'm going to go with
one
Ostapenko.
1 second.
I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with Halep, Ostapenko. I'm not sure. Kontaveit and Sakkari don't sound like players that would defeat Iga.
Well, you had to get 2, and you did get at least 1, because Simona Halep has beaten Iga Swiatek.
I knew that
the
one.
The other player to beat Iga Swiatek was not Kontaveit. It was not Ostapenko. It was Maria Sakkari.
No way.
Yes.
Damn it.
That's not bad, though. 50%. Not too
What was
shabby.
The score? Can you tell me the score?
You know what? Let me...
I just want to know, like, because I don't remember this one.
Let's see. Okay, so last year she won. So 2 years ago. Okay, so she beat Goff last year. 2 years ago. It was 2021. She lost Sakkari 6-4, 6-4 in the quarterfinals. Yeah. And the reason I threw Ostapenko in there, because of course she has one, so it kind of throws it off, right?
That red herring, you threw me under the bus there. Oh, you did me with that. It was a good one to throw in there, though, because I've been talking about her too much. I think you got in my head there.
Yeah.
And semi-final Sakkari was in my head from too long ago. Anyway, well, Covey wins on this one. So chalk one up for Covey. You're on JG's side, so that probably means you get a point for JG there. that's the end of Tennis Shootout for this episode. Let us know if you got that right in the comments section below. And, I'm sure most people probably got Sakkari right. No one was on my bandwagon with Ostapenko. But let's move on now to the rankings update. Right, and we're going to have a look at the rankings. Obviously, nothing has changed since the last episode on the seeding side of things, because as we're looking at the men's here, we know that Alcaraz is going to become number one after Rome, and he will take up the top seed, and Djokovic will drop down to number 2. So it doesn't really change anything in the slam perspective, although if we see the draw and then it's much more favorable for one than the other, it could benefit Djokovic being number 2. You don't know. That's the thing we don't know until we see the draw. But I'm excited about that draw. Yeah. We were talking just before we came on. There are obviously some additional wild card entries that we weren't sure we were going to get. And Benoit Paire gets in as a wild card. There he is.
There you go, the Frenchman.
Got to a final, I believe, in a challenger this past week.
Recently, yeah.
That's it. So, I mean,
good to see.
That's it. And you've got Dominic Thiem in with a wild card, Shevchenko in with a wild card, David Goffin, Tara Daniel. I believe that these are just like additional players who have just been allowed into the draw. Are these just, I think that they were supposed to qualify, these ones, but they've been put into the draw, because you can see down here, these are the people who have withdrawn from the tournament now. We've got Nadal, Kyrgios, Brooksby, and Kwan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a look down here at, they show us withdrawals now from the qualifying. So you can see there, Dominic Thiem, Taro Daniel. So now they've gone into the main draw now. And you can see there, Benoit Paire obviously also on there as well.
Mm-hmm. And Van Rijthoven, he's withdrawal, but he's not in the actual, he hasn't made it in, right?
Let me go back up to the top and just have a quick check.
He was 154. So yeah, no, he's not.
I don't see him in there.
Yeah. He had a nice little run last year. Was it in the Netherlands?
Yeah, he won a grass court tournament. Then he did quite well at Wimbledon as well.
He met it in the final. Yeah, I think it was his first ATP level tour match or something. And he ended up winning the tournament. It's crazy at home.
So, yeah, we'll have to come back and then have a check on this to see. I think we've got Harold Mayotte's managed to get himself a wild card, another French player. Got a wild card into the qualification, though. So we will get... All of this will probably keep changing as we go through. See, a few other players have managed to get themselves wild card entries. These ones in green are sort of other players who aren't French who get in. We've got Ferreira Silva, Mokizuki, and Mariano Navone, Juan Pablo Fikovic, Zachary Svaja, Kemikel, Li Tu. And then look, yeah, you've got all of the actual, like, you've got a lot of French people who are making up the numbers down there as well. You got some protected rankings down there as well. Lucas Puy and Igor Gerasimov. God, I've not seen or heard that name for a while. So, yeah, and Herbert as well. Look, I mean, he's going to have to try hard. I remember him. He was in a final in France against Medvedev a couple of years ago. So, it's fallen right off the bandwagon. Good doubles player, but let's try and.
What about Gael Monfils? Is he? He got the wild. He got a wild card.
Yeah, I believe he got a wild card. Yeah, into the main draw though, so he'd be down. Where is he? No, he's a protected ranking, not a wild card.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he protected ranking of 35 as well, which is nuts. Right, so this is the best that we can find for the women's. They don't have the same website for some reason. I don't know. Maybe they should set that up. This is just going down looking at the women's seedings. Not sure if much is going to change on this, but we can have a look through some of the live rankings once we've gone down this list. And you can see here on the entry ranking is on the right and the seed is on the left. So moving down through here. Let's see if anything's going to be changing after Rome. That's the key component here. So if we look there, we can see that we're back in a moving up to number 5 in the world at the moment. And if she was to win, she could move up to number 4 in the world, which is quite a big change. We've got Kudermetova as well. She could potentially move. If she was to win the whole tournament, she could move all the way up to number 7 in the world. She could overtake Ons Jabeur, which is...
35.
Pretty impressive. And we've got there Ostapenko. She's moving up through the ranks well. If she was to win the tournament, she could move up to overtake Klychikova. Yeah, I mean, there's a Kalinina. She's shot up 19 places already. If she was to go even further and win it, up to into the top 20. So, there's you can see here at the moment where they've been entered in with their entry, just to gain entry to the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And they go down all the way to Bernarda Pera at the moment, who's the 32nd seed as it stands with the entry. See the Kalinina there, just at 35. So there could be, I'm thinking it's all going to change, really. We've got, you can see all those players in green are going to be shifting around some of these places. And you can see some of the pluses and minuses. Vekic, she's gone up 3. Madison Keys up 3. Kim Wenzheng up 2. Anybody who's a big faller? I can't really see any. Trevisan dropped 7 place? Is anybody dropping outside the seedings though, which would be interesting to see. Martic drops 9, so yeah, she's one. We've got Bernarda Pera. We're just speaking about her. She drops 6 places, and Bianca Andreescu dropping down to 41 in the world.
Wow.
10 spots, yeah. So, and Tomjanovic there, Collins, another one dropping down the rankings, and Sasnovic as well.
6 spots.
Sharif as well.
Losing wow, 10. She's been doing really well too.
Somebody we've not spoken about enough, but JG, one of his players to watch, Marketa Vondrousova. She's up 15 places, up to number 55.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and Ziyu Wang up 14 places as well. So I think that we'll come to in the next episode. We'll be going through probably the final seedings and the final rankings for the tournament. But that's as much as we're going to go through for this episode. And let's get on to our final segment. This is our surprise packages. Right, we're going to keep this one short and sweet. We had on last week's episode our men and women who we feel that could be surprise packages at this year's Roland Garros. They have to be outside the top 10. Last week, I gave Sasha Zverev, and I also gave Yelena Ostapenko as my surprise packages. JG gave Dusan Lajovic and Marketa Vondrousova. This week, we'll start with the men. Who's your man? Who's your surprise package, Covey?
All right, it's a tough one. I had a couple of clay court guys who've been playing pretty well lately. But I'm going to choose, and I hope it's not the same that you have. I'm going with Francisco Cerúndolo of our introduction, of our Game to Love introduction on our streams. Yeah, Francisco Cerúndolo has been playing well. He had a nice little swing in Indian Wells, Miami. I think Miami, he went to the quarters, semis last year. And yeah, he's just been having some good results. He recently beat Jannik Sinner in Rome. So he is my surprise package.
Great pick. Love that pick. Absolutely love that pick. I feel that if he does well, I'm all for it. Spoke to him. Thoroughly nice guy. And hopefully we can get him back on the podcast again at some point. But my male player to watch is less safe, I feel, than Cerúndolo. Cerúndolo will be a seed in the tournament, but he is outside the top 10. My one isn't even in the main draw for the competition. it is, well, based upon the entry list, Aslan Karatsev I'm going for. Obviously, we've had him on the podcast. Well, maybe we're just going for podcast guests on here, but I feel that he's suddenly coming back to a bit of form. He's somebody nobody is going to want to play if he hits any type of form. He's a player who's beaten Djokovic on clay courts in the past. I feel that nobody wants to play Alcaraz when he's playing his best tennis. He's just one of those. He'll ruin your day. You'll come onto the court. He's like the Ostapenko of the men's side. He'll just play his best tennis and you won't see the ball. It'll just go tum, 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 and it's gone. So Karatsev is mine.
All right. That's a good pick. He also made it to the semis of Madrid from quali. So very impressive little run of form. How about on the women's side? Why don't you go first on this one?
On the women's side, even though I saw signs of promise in Rome, I feel that she's somebody who can always cause a threat if she gets a good draw, and that's Donna Vekic I'm going to go for.
Ooh, okay. That's a good pick. Now, I'm going for someone who did very well last year at Roland Garros, was a semi-finalist. She's a little bit hot and cold, but she's been a little bit hotter than cold lately. Her name is Martina Trevisan, going for the Italian. Another deep run, potentially. Let's see if she can do it. Martina Trevisan.
I like that one as well. Good one. Yeah, if she turns it back on again, she's a bit cold at the minute, but could come back. Let us know your surprise packages in the comments section below. We want to know who you think is going to be like a player outside the top 10 who could potentially shock everyone at the tournament and get maybe into a quarter, maybe a semi, maybe even further.
But payday. Grand Slam payday.
But I think that that is it for episode 2 of the countdown. Well done if you made it all the way to the end. Let us know your thoughts on all of the stuff that we've covered. And we'll see you on the next one. Anything left to say, Covey?
Thank you for having me on this new segment. Really, really excited. It's a lot of fun. Always happy to talk some tennis.
That's it. Make sure you've hit the like button, subscribe if you're new to the channel, and we're only 9 days away from Roland Garros.
Let's go, baby.
Podcast Network.